I want Nick to write some fan fiction about something. Because all I picture is like a third grader that just found out what tits are.
Welcome back to the Spin Dash Retro Gaming Podcast, the podcast that's so exclusive that our friends and family don't even know we're doing it. Hello, my name is Matt, and I am this week's host. With me today, I am joined by two punctuation-themed bunny-killing robots, Angle Bracket Nick and Interrobang John.
I like it. It's catchy.
How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm feeling good. I got three shots of vodka in me.
What?
It's a solid Sunday.
It's Sunday fun day.
Yeah.
I like how you haven't had vodka this whole time and John just been up your ass nonstop. Like, Nick, get some vodka. Nick, get some vodka. So then you call in and you're already like three deep.
He already did all his punishment shots, but we had no fun with it.
Was that?
We didn't get to have any fun with your shots. You already did them before.
So, Nick, you have vodka?
I made my special punch.
Okay, do tell.
John knows about this.
Isn't it like Hawaiian punch? It's blue and vodka, right?
Yeah. I don't have no Krakow on this time. Is it Curacao or is it Krakow?
It's Curacao. It Krakow. No, Krakow is... I don't know. Sounds like Morocco.
It's like that dumb fruit, like acai or whatever it
acai,
is.
Acai, yeah.
It looks like a kai.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure it's Curacao. I've heard it said. We were making fancy drinks a while ago.
For whoever actually listens to this, please, at the end, to our social media, correct us if we're wrong. Either or.
On any pronunciation.
Yeah. Exactly.
We barely know English. John, what do you got?
I got a pumpkin head by Shipyard, you know?
Oh,
got a case. Nice. I went to Portland, got a case. Pretty good.
Nice.
What about you, Matt?
I'm still finishing off the Sam Adams from our fun weekend that we just got back from.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
So that's very exciting.
Yeah.
But I lost.
One of the things I wanted to do... I don't know how much like you guys just laughed your ass. I don't know if you guys saw Justin's text to me when he was telling me how bad Dan was doing. Okay, so for the listeners, we had a camp this weekend. Bunch of us got together. I missed the first night because I'm a loser. But apparently the first night you guys went nuts.
Yeah,
does that sound correct?
Well, really nuts. Just Dan can't hold it apparently.
No, he drank like five double IPAs on an empty stomach.
Well, whose fault is that?
I fed him lunch. I can't. He's kind of a gremlin.
Responsible for him.
Yeah.
So Justin texts me, right? He's like, dude, Dan is not good. And I was like, is he puking? He's like, yeah, I've been here for 45 minutes and he's still in the bathroom puking. So then Justin goes and he proceeds to like live tweet Dan's evening. Like he has these big pushes like every now and then. Sounds like he's trying to give birth in there. Contractions are about every 5 minutes. he says if he gets down to 4 minutes, take him to the ER. He's like, log entry, hour one, still no Dan. Big series of pushes. I think he's crowning.
Screenshot those.
Oh, man, they're the best. I asked is he dying? He's like, I'm not sure. He's like, well, Nick is loud, drunk, and bitching about Carol. So log entry, 1 hour, 25 minutes. Still no words, but we hear his first words. John, the Celtics blow chunks like I do.
That was a good one.
He took it in stride, man. You know, he realized his situation. Some of us aren't champs when it comes to puking, like, you know, myself.
You know, puke and rally.
Yeah, he just gets devastated. He's down for the count.
That was so good, though. It was such a great, like, even though I was only out there for the one night, it was nice, like, to get away from kids and wives and whatnot.
Yeah, so. It was very peaceful.
It was good.
It was as much needed during this pandemic.
Yeah, we had to all get together so we could all trade Corona.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. My kids are still Corona free as they've been tested for the second time last week.
Oh, my God. Mine haven't been hit yet, you know, with tests, but it's coming.
And it's not like they had symptoms. It's just more or less the daycare. If someone has a symptom, everyone has to be tested before they can actually go in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I get it.
But it is what it is.
So, one thing I forgot to do, kids, have you picked up anything since we last recorded?
Who wants to go first on this one? Should we talk about what happened during our weekend?
We had our exchange. That's right.
We did.
Oh, yes!
It happened.
Yeah.
We greased each other's wheels and we lubed up and we exchanged.
Well, you know, yours might not work because I didn't do any of that. So you might have to, you know, self-clean it.
Why are you looping stuff that you sell each other or trade each other?
Well, apparently I'm the only one to test it all the stuff.
I think it works. It worked once. So there you go.
It did turn on, but I don't know. It's been a while since I turned on an N64. But is it like the SNES until it has a game and it doesn't actually register anything?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, it turned on, function. I was happy that it had the expansion kit into it. It's a solid controller. The stick actually is not, like, horrible. It's really nice.
Flaccid. Yeah.
That was my aftermarket controller.
Yeah. So, it seems to be functioning. I have gained a N64 with an aftermarket controller. With expansion kit onto it, so that's gonna be good. I can play pretty much every game. I can play all the games.
Donkey Kong.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can't wait. That will be making a debut, boys.
What's another game that's worth it for the expansion pack?
Majora's Mask.
Oh right, yeah.
Other ones use it, like they'll get better textures, or I don't know. Maybe it ups the frame rate for the most part.
That's what I think really, of it.
Majora's Mask is like that in Donkey Kong,
right?
64, the two. Perfect Dark. Perfect Dark also needs it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's going to be a fun one. We should add that to the list sometime.
The N64 list is definitely growing. Like, I know...
It's getting cheaper. Like, is it me or is it getting cheaper, too, seems?
Yeah? I haven't looked.
It's not, like, overly as pricey as I thought it was going to be. I was looking at my list. Maybe it's just the stuff I want is cheap.
Then that's even better for us because I am not emulating N64. Fuck that thing.
Nope. Pound sand. But yeah, John, what did you inherit from me?
I got, I think, 6 Game Boy games. Original Game Boy.
Yeah, 7, sir.
7. All right. There we go. Just add to the collection. So I think I'm up to like 20 games now.
Nice. That's a good
Game Boy. Yeah.
The Game Boy just doesn't hit it for me. That's why I was willing to trade it. I was like, it doesn't do anything. It wasn't like, I never had actually had the console. I think my mom had it. I had the Pocket and then Color. And then I think I went to Advance and then SP.
Yeah.
Then I didn't get anything until I got the 3DS. Oh, sorry. No, I got a Micro. But.
Played a lot of original brick, the gray brick. That was a good time.
That's going to be your your go-to collection right there, John. You're going to amass a big, you know, stockpile 400, 500 Game Boy games.
I get a backlight one at some point.
Yeah. That's modding a GBA is on my list.
I remember being hamstrung by the streetlights on road trips, you know?
It's classic.
Yeah.
Wait till the next one.
Yeah. That was cool. No, it was a good trade. Good weekend.
Yeah. I had other pickup, by the way.
Uh-oh.
So I made some extra money doing some stuff. I'm not going to say what stuff. So this is...
Yeah.
Selling yourself?
Maybe. But I invested into a newer game for the Switch. I end up going in on a Animal... The... What is that?
Animal Crossing?
Yeah, Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Oh, God.
I'm not joining you on
nope.
that.
Nope.
Don't. Because Matt, you probably could do it, but John, your attention span would not yield to this game at all.
Can't do it anymore, man.
No.
Just John bitching about, you know, collecting cherries or whatever the current... Isn't there like a market on that? Like, people are trying
like,
to
it's insane. Like, I've been... Like, I went onto Reddit just like, oh, you know, what's on Reddit? And I'm like, oh my God. Like people talk about this game almost like a stock market and some stuff.
That's crazy.
Like, I was like, whoa. I'm like, I just want to know how I can advance in the game a little bit.
It's a Second Life.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom Nook.
Yeah. That's all I got.
I'm excited to share my pickups.
Yeah, what do you get?
All right, so the least important of the two is I picked up a set of PSP cables that lets me play my PSP on a TV screen, which is going to come in handy when we tackle not the next game, but the game after this, which Nick has picked. Because what I can do is I can play the game out there and talk to my wife and hang out and watch TV. And when she falls asleep, I can run in the other room, plug the AV cables in, and boom. Up and running on the TV screen. It's basically like a pre-switch at this point. So I'm pretty excited about that because I'm going to need that. But my big pickup was, and I talked about this last time, and it was on its way from the Netherlands, and it's here and installed. But I picked up a GC loader for my GameCube.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm on an optical drive emulator kick ever since I put one in on the Dreamcast. And I have a Game Boy player. And the disc for the Game Boy player goes, last time I checked, between $80 and $90. So for $20 more, you get the optical drive emulator and you can play, you know, backups of your games on that. Not have to worry about the disc drive crapping out on you someday in the future. So pretty excited. I've been playing a ton of Double Dash, which I missed the first time around. Playing Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, that's
a sweet. That game is gorgeous. I mean, it was a launch title for the GameCube, and it is shockingly good.
I think that's one of the top five Star Wars games of, you know, video games.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
I underestimated. I'm like, holy shit, this game is great looking, and it is fun. So
is it going to make the list of us playing?
it's not terribly expensive to get a hold of, so, you know, that would be a good one for the list, and I don't think we complain too much.
Nice.
Yeah. So to bring it full circle... And to kind of tie this thing in with my game of the week that I've picked us for us to talk about, I tried to install the game of the week on the GC loader and play it, and I couldn't get it to work. But I got it to work on my Dreamcast because there is a Dreamcast port. But I spent the entire time playing it on the PSP. So it all comes full circle. Game this week is Cave Story for PC.
Or, like I like to say, Cave Story plus Furry Story. The real story.
So when I first mentioned this, like, you started playing it and you're like, this is a game about furries. This is a whole game about furries.
That's the first thing I thought. I'm like, why is there one, because I didn't do any background check, didn't research, and I'm like, oh, I'll just install and start playing. And I'm like, where am I? I'm in a dark place with a bunch of animals. Oh, it's about furries. That's what it is. I'm like, Matt picked us one of those random ones that's going to there. I mean, Cave Story. Yeah, I'm sure. Let's go for it.
So you were going on so much about furries in our group chat that I was reading out loud to Nikki, and she's like, oh, please, God, would you please shut the fuck up? But I was reading about furry subculture.
Oh, God.
And it's not just people banging in furry suits. There's like more to it than that. And they have like business cards with alternate identities and stuff. There's like a whole thing to it. So yeah, you sent me on a rabbit hole one night. I'm like, what am I reading?
Social hierarchies.
I don't know. I mean, there's a whole system. I don't know if there's like a, you know, you're a cat furry, so you're below the giraffe furry, and then like the lion. I don't know if it's like the animal jungle. I don't know if that plays into it. I don't know, but
Nick, you got to go to a Comic-Con and find some furries and interview them.
They're just a fat Sailor Moon.
Nick, how much would it cost for you to go as Sailor Moon to a Comic-Con? How much do we have to pay for you to go as Sailor Moon?
Let's start putting the bids in, boys. Let's see where we can go.
John, how much would you put for Nick to do that? What is that worth to you?
I'd build your dick.
Wow, that's a lot more than I would put in. Jesus fuck. I'm already going to go broke for you putting Carol's face on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's going to be epic.
Oh, man.
She's pissed me off today, so I'm really going to go for it now.
Do it. I'm going to think of some more quotes that she's legitimately said so I can get a good one on my t-shirt.
I just got to find that wearing a trash bag picture.
That's sexy. Oh, my God. Oh man, this is a hell of a tangent. Jesus fuck. So Nick, you have no experience with this game, correct?
None. I didn't hear about it until I saw it on our list.
Really, John?
I heard about it.
Which is weird.
Yeah, because my one of my friends from childhood loved playing games on the PC, and I think he had told me about it. I saw him playing it once, something like that, because he downloaded a lot of these things. But I never played it. No.
John, you disappoint me.
I always do. What else is new?
So this pick, actually, we were originally going to be doing Metal Gear Solid tonight, and I pushed it back because Nick's got a big Bertha coming, and I gotta make way for that thing, put some time into that. So I wanted something that was different. After Body Harvest, John kind of got into my head, like, let's go outside of our comfort zone a little bit. And getting something on the PC was of interest to me. And we were doing the music challenge. And I can't remember what day it was, but it was like indie music. And we were trying to apply our rules to indie music. I'm like, well, I can only think of one fucking indie game that I would consider retro, and that's Cave Story. So my history with this game, I knew of this game before we started any of this. So I think I've mentioned this a couple times, but I was big into emulation, high school, college, whatnot. And I'm a huge lover of Mega Man. Got a raging hard on for Mega Man. Fucking love Mega Man. And Boner. There's a game. We're going to go there someday. There's a game that was never released in the United States called Rockman and Forte, or Mega Man and Bass. And I learned when I was in the emulation phase that had a fan translation. And that blew my mind that I could play a game that was released in Japan, apply a patch to it, read it in English, and a whole new world would open up to me of playing Japan-only games. So I learned the different translators out there. DJAP was huge back in the day. And another one that's still going on is Aeon Genesis. And I believe Aeon Genesis did stuff like Live Alive, Treasure of the Rudras. Aeon Genesis did a translation of Cave Story. So I was going through their listing way back in the day, I wanted to play all these games that I never had access to, and one of them was Cave Story. I played it a little bit and then moved on, because that's kind of what I did with a lot of the games I emulated. I just played it for a little bit, and then something else caught my attention, you know, kind of like a crow with a piece of tinfoil. So 2008 or so, I played the game the whole way through. That's probably close to 2010. That's kind of when stuff like I got introduced to stuff like Braid and Fez and Mega Man. A lot of these retro things referenced Cave Story, both as being a retro game that brought back 2D gaming into the forefront, also brought in the concept of indie games. It really was the godfather of indie retro games. So yeah, I played this before, and it seemed like a good pick for all those reasons for something else to play on our list.
It was a good pick. I mean, I really enjoy this game through and through. It kind of reminded me of like a mix of, like you said, Mega Man, A bit of Contra really kicked in for me.
Yep, I see that.
Just because it's pretty much you just hold up, you pretty much can just, you're just running and gunning.
There's a lot of bad guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys know anything about the development of this?
No research. I left this all up to you. I just played it.
All right. Very, very short thing, and then we'll get to your furries because I don't want to stop that. Oh, so, God. I'm going to, again, pronunciation, correct us. It was released in Japan in 2004, I believe in December, under the name Dokutsu Monogatari. That sounded pretty good. Pat on the back. Literal translation is, of course, Cave Story. It's described as a Metroidvania, although I really don't think it is based on how I looked at that. More on that later. The game was developed by one guy.
Yeah.
One guy only. Daisuke Amaya, also known as Pixel. So his group was Studio Pixel, or he was Studio Pixel. He made this game in his spare time over the course of about 5 years. I believe he started it in college and finished it when he had some kind of coding job.
Yeah, he learned a lot of stuff along the way from what I saw.
Yeah, he made mention somewhere that he made some mistakes along the way. He'd have planned out things a little differently, but this was to be expected of someone learning how to make their own game. I mean, it's incredible what he did. I mean, it's funny, John, because remember when we were playing Battle of Olympus, you were talking about people shitting in buckets. You know, there's a three staff teams shitting in buckets to make a game. Like,
yeah.
This is an example of shitting in buckets. Like, this guy put so much work into making this game.
And it really shows.
It does. There's a lot of love for this. To kind of wrap it up, some other interesting things here. He created his own software to make the music for this game.
Yeah.
So he created his own engine to make the game in, and then he created his own software to make the music. I mean, this really was...
That's wild.
From scratch. Everything was created from scratch. Lastly, it was translated, as I said before, by Aeon Genesis. I think that was in like 2005. You'll see this name pop up a lot, Gideon G. He's the lead on the project. He did some translating with the lead script translator by someone by the name of, and I don't know if this is a real name or not, but Shitsu. I have my questions there. Also involved in this, and John, you might get the reference here, goes by the name Tomato. So it's Clyde Mandolin. He does the Legends of Localization website, which you guys ought to check out. It's pretty fantastic. But Tomato is the one that did Mother 3, the GBA sequel to Earthbound.
Oh, yeah.
That's his big, like, he's done a bunch of projects, but that really is his claim to fame, right, is Mother 3.
Yeah.
Massive, massive project. So, the game itself. Any of you two want to jump onto the story? Nick?
You fall in. It confused me. I'm like, so you, there's this guy that's on the computer. Sis, are you there? Sis, come here, sis. And I'm like, is there someone in another room? He's on his computer. The next thing I know, you're talking to animals. I'm like, is this kind of like the, what's that anime that I can't, Hack/Slash, where you go into a computer world and you're whatever you want? And I'm like, oh, this guy's maybe controlling this character, and there's a bunch of furries here. Let the sexcapade start. So, yeah, I didn't really pay attention to anything besides, like, okay, I need to do this. I need to do this. Sure, we'll just jump this. Okay, we'll just jump this. The next thing you know, you're fighting seems to be, to me, a very large... lunchbox with a face.
Yeah, I was gonna say toaster, but yeah, lunchbox works.
So I'm jumping ahead, right? But initially, when Pixel made this game, every bad guy in the game, he put a placeholder in, just put a placeholder sprite, you know, come back and we'll make the animations and the things later. Everyone was a bar of soap. And Balrog, as we'll get to, Balrog was kind of like, he just left it. He's like, I like it. It's charming. So right? Balrog, I believe, is a bar of soap.
And it's funny because Balrog is supposed to be this scary mythological creature, and it's a fucking rectangle.
That's it.
So, John, did you beyond the World of Furries, get anything in the story on this one?
Yeah, there's you drop into this village, and apparently you aren't the first one to go there. And there's a doctor that is using these, I don't know who made these critters or what they are. Mamigas is what they're called. Yep. I guess they're animals, sentient animals, you know? it's weird. But you have to stop the doctor from taking them because he's going to do experiments with a red flower that turns them into monsters, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Let's break down that sentence.
So, yeah.
The doctor is doing experiments. Wow. Experiments using drugs on animals.
Dude.
They're sentient.
It's even weirder than that. All right. So.
You know what this reminds me of?
Oh, no.
Strange Island of Dr. Moreau.
You always bring it back to that.
Jesus.
Always. We should do a live stream of us just watching that and just talking about it.
It's real weird.
Here's the story, and we'll get fucking weird. The story is that there's a floating island that appears above the surface, which the surface, I believe in our case, is Earth. It's just a floating island appears. And a team of scientists go to investigate what this is. I take that back. I take that back because initially there would have been, in my notes say, there's a war between robots and bunnies. And we don't know why this war took place, but I believe it's 10 years before you show up on the island. We, on the surface, somehow sent a bunch of robots up to there to seize the demon crown.
Right.
Which I guess is an all-powerful ancient relic or whatnot.
Yeah.
And there's this giant war between robots and bunnies, and I would love to just watch that game. The bunnies are these Mamigas that John mentioned. And the Mamigas are almost completely wiped out. But in a kind of like a last-ditch effort, they have these like special red flowers that they eat, and they become jacked up like Hulk bunnies. So the Mamigas fought back the robots. So I believe when we are – I believe our main character, which we find out later, is a robot. And there was two robots that were sent up. We'll talk about the other character in a bit. To destroy the crown. Not let this crown that gives you all-powerful – whatever, fall into the hands of who it shouldn't be. At some point, a team of scientists goes up to this floating island. You've got the Sakamoto family. There's Sue, who is, I guess, a little girl who gets transformed into a Mamiga. There's her brother, Kazuma, who's the dude that was sending the stuff, eating cockroaches and stuff, hiding in one of the shelters. And then there's the mother. There's also Dr. Booster, who makes jetpacks. There's another guy. He begins with I. I can't remember what his name is, but he was an assistant. And then there was the doctor. Now, the doctor was some kind of outside dude, not involved in the project, but he really just like joined them because he wanted the crown. And for some reason, his assistants are Misery and Balrog, and they are forced to follow or obey the orders of whoever is wearing the crown. So yeah. The doctor gets the crown. So he's running around. He's snatching up the Mamigas, all these bunny furry people that Nick love. And his goal is he's going to feed them all these red flowers and then unleash them on the surface of the earth and just like take it over. That's his whole shtick. So literally this game is about robots and bunnies fighting. Nick, your thoughts.
Well, finally know what it's all about.
All right then.
A lot to unpack there, Nick.
I mean, It's, you definitely know where it came from. It's not a it's not a game that you can know that was, it came from the US. I will say that. But yeah, I how do you unpack such all this? Like, I was trying to read up on it. Like, apparently also, you know, Misery is one of the kids as well of the and boss that you'll end up coming, we'll come talk about later, or like the uncle, I can't remember. There's like a family tree as well.
Yeah.
It's, and then you have technically your robot. You, and again, we'll talk about this other character there. Like you're mentioned of is your sister.
I don't think she's a sister.
That's how like it was kind of referred to by like the stuff I read online, like through the wikis and stuff of that nature.
So you have made out better than I did in my research on. So the other robot's name is Curly Brace. So I don't know if you guys noticed, but the robots all have punctuation mark names. So Quote is who you play, and he's a robot. And his counterpart in here is Curly Brace. And that's, I don't know if you know what that is, but that's that weird like curly looking bracket that's on the keyboard. It's not a parentheses, but it's the one with a little point in the middle.
Well, yeah.
Hmm. That's a Curly Brace. So fun fact. So I Googled, I wanted to know, like, what is Curly's backstory? I've got the rest of them. And I stumbled upon this website that, like, stores fan fiction. And the title that popped up was Curly Brace's Burly Cock. So I sent that to you guys. Yeah, I sent that to you guys. I think Paul was the only one that read it. But literally, it's a whole fanfic. I tried to find her backstory. It's a whole fanfic about how Curly wakes up, discovers she has a cock, and then just bangs the hell out of Quote in the ass. That's the whole story. So I found very little on Curly, but I did find a fanfic about her ass fucking Quote.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
I don't want to know that person that wrote that.
I applaud them because it was very well done for what it was. Yeah, so Curly Brace is the other character that we haven't mentioned. Nick, you touched on the family tree. So Misery, one of the two kind of like henchman characters in this game, is forced to control – forced to follow the wearer of the crown. She actually – her name is Misery. She forced her uncle, which is – his name is Balas, to create this crown for some reason. I have no idea why. And – As a curse for this, she's forced to follow whoever wears the crown. Balas is this like sorcerer type person, and he actually is the true, spoiler alert, last boss that we fight in this game.
Last boss, like last five bosses, or three or four, whatever. Jesus, pain in the ass.
It was I jumping ahead, but I did not get to beat him because that was a fucking bitch.
These boss fights are not easy, man.
This game wasn't, you know, I remember it being hard when I played it the first time, and that's why I never beat it the first time.
Yeah.
But this game was difficult.
It wouldn't be you. You wouldn't pick an easy game. Come on.
No, I like to, you know,
it was fun. Like it wasn't like it was addictive. Like I had to get past this. Like even though I'm dying, I kept on wanting to keep on going and going.
It was fair. I found it fair.
Fair deaths.
Yeah. I guess we're kind of getting into the gameplay a little bit. Controls.
Ooh, floaty.
Very simple. Yeah, Nick, talk about that.
It kind of did remind me of like the older games where the controls can be a little bit floaty. So it wasn't a, like, you stopped. It was almost like you had a little bit of, like, ice under, and you're jumping. Like, you had to be, like, you kind of had to, like, definitely think when you jump. I guess it was to say, like, okay, if this is how this character moves, I need to get there. I know the range. Like, if you hold your jump button for longer, you're going to get a higher jump or a longer jump versus if you just tapped, like, did a rapid tap, you get a very short jump.
Yeah.
It's not Mario.
Yeah.
It's definitely not the gravity when you come back down to Earth isn't very fast. You know, you go up pretty quick, but you don't come down very quick.
Yeah. I played on my PC. and I didn't like the bun layout, and I couldn't figure out how to change it.
Oh, yeah.
The bun layout was kind of crap.
Isn't it like the arrow keys move you, mm-hmm. and it's like Z and X or jump shoot?
Yeah.
Yep. S to change weapons. Yeah. It was...
Well, it's S and I think A to change weapons back and forth.
One of those two.
Yeah.
I tried it on the little pocket go thing, and it wasn't good on that, so I switched to the PC, and that was a little better. But yeah, the controls, man, like if you stopped and thought or hesitated at all, it was not productive. So you just had to keep going, you know?
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention, you know, and John, you just reminded me of that. There's a ton of ways to play this game. It is, it's not like Doom level where, you know, like it's not running on pregnancy tests yet, but it's running on, I mean, so initially it was released on the PC. I played it on the PSP.
Yeah.
You can play it. There's a build of it for RetroPie.
There's so much.
John, your BitBoy has it. There's a build on the GameCube, but I couldn't get it working. The Dreamcast version does work. There's a TI graphing calculator that will run it. I mean, it's insane. You go down to the list, like they tried to put it on the GBA, but that became an experimental port that they put on the DS that they didn't finish because I believe it was a DSi WiiWare title at one point. There's a group called Nicholas which published it, pick up publishing rights at some point. It was originally a freeware game. You could just download the PC version and go with it. But if you wanted more bells and whistles, you could play it on the Wii. You could play it on the DS. There was a port of it that was 3D for the 3DS. Hmm. There's a Switch port. There's a Steam port. I mean, my God, the list is endless. There's a someone ported this to the Genesis.
Wow.
Like, it's just, there's an endless amount of ways that you can play this game. But yeah, I think I just kind of derailed things. So John, we kind of talked a little bit about it being, you know, kind of a, other than the floating controls, it was kind of like a simple run and gun. There's hints of Contra, hints of Mega Man. Weapons. You want to talk weapons?
Yeah. So, and I was going to say too, I have an old disc that I love to play of DOS games, and this would have fit the bill. I mean, it was more advanced than they were, but I can't, like Crystal Caves. There was like a secret agent game, you know, just a lot of platform adventure type games. And I think this had that feel for me. So I liked it a lot. It reminded me of a few of those that I love to play. So the weapons, it kind of reminded me of when you drop in Zelda Link to the Past, where you're walking through and this guy just gives you a weapon. You start out, you know, you're in a cave, start out, gives you the Polar Star. I think it's like a pistol. And then from there you get a few more. There's the missile launcher, the fireball, which I liked a lot because you could almost use it as like a force field. You know, you shoot them and you run along with them and it kind of wipes out a lot of the ground enemies, but, it was not good for aerial combat. I didn't get the bubbler.
Oh, the bubbler was great.
Yeah. I didn't make it as far as you guys in this game, so probably wasn't useful at that point for me.
It was fun to play with.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a concept of the weapons is, and it kind of reminded me of like old school, like shooters, like Gradius comes to mind, where you power up your weapons. So like every weapon has three levels and you get these different levels, like when you kill something, it'll drop either like health or it'll drop missile upgrades or it'll drop these like, I don't know, bouncing gold triangles. And if you collect the triangles, it keeps upping your level on your gun. And every time you take damage, your level is downgraded. So the more hits you take, the worse you end up in this game. It punishes you twice. You're going to lose health. You're going to lose your gun power.
That was a cool factor.
Yeah, that's fun.
It was a little, and you know, and it gave you that incentive of, you know, you got your, you know, all your weapons are powered up and you're just mowing down stuff. You get hit hard enough. It's definitely a setback.
Yeah. And then having to switch to a weapon that wasn't powered down. And then when the golden nuggets fall, you got to switch back to get them.
Yeah, I kept on doing the level up other stuff is using a higher power or fully maxed out level to level up every other weapon I had.
Mm-hmm.
There's another weapon in this called the Blade that you get after something in the story takes place. And that's kind of cool. Like you throw it out and it's basically like the final power up is like one of the characters that dies is that person going out and just attacking. And there's like you can level that up or trade it for another gun called Nemesis. And that gets weaker every time you level it up.
Hmm. That's odd.
Yeah, definitely. You don't want to get hit with that. And I never got the snake. So with the weapons, this game was interesting in that as you went through the game, you had options to trade weapons for other weapons. And you, depending on what you planned on doing in this game, you might not want to trade the weapons up.
Right.
It could be punishing depending on what ending you wanted to the game.
Yeah, I didn't trade for the machine gun. When it was offered.
One of the things that was really neat about this was the, I think the design of like the locations as you go through the game. So like John, you mentioned earlier, you start off in this cave. I think Nick, you mentioned it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a bunch of videos on like the theory of the game design on why you started off in this cave and what it was trying to teach you. And basically there's no like intro to this game of this is what you need to do or how you need to do it. It just, it teaches you as you go. So in that first area, you learn, you know, jump over things. This is how you shoot once you get the hold of the gun. It teaches you to stay out of water because you only have so much air.
Yep.
You know, everything you really need to know as the game progresses, you can learn in that intro in the cave. And the game kind of scales upward. So you move from the cave to the Mamiga village, which you mentioned earlier, John. And there you learn that Sue, who I mentioned earlier, the Mamigas are kind of pissed off at her for some reason because the doctor has kidnapped Toriko and mistaked her for Sue. So you're sent through this game to go these various levels to rescue the brother and whatnot. So the first level you go to is the egg corridor. What'd you guys think of that?
That was decent.
Yeah, it quite literally is what the level tends to be. It's just a corridor. You just slowly run to one end to another.
That thing on the bottom fucked me up a couple times.
Yep.
Yes. Talk about that.
Yeah, so there's a skate. It looks like a white hedgehog. It's Sonic's evil twin.
That's what I thought, actually.
Furry counterpart, just buried, just wrecking shit. So it kind of follows you as you make your way along, and you got to drop down into like the tunnel part where it's at a couple times to get up in a couple of the egg chambers. And so if it touches you, you're dead, and then you got to go back. And I died a lot. I mean, not just in this, and I, you know, thankfully there were a lot of saves, so you never really got backtracked that hard when you died. I mean, maybe a couple minutes here and there, but saving often was key. This level was pretty easy. You got to get a couple things to progress to the next part, and then you fight. Do you fight the Balrog guy again?
You fight him like four times.
Yeah. So you fight Balrog. You first fight him in the Mamiga village, and what's funny about that fight before you even get to the egg corridor is he gives you the option. He's like, do you want to fight me?
Yeah.
And if you check no, first of all, he always like bursts through the walls and
Kool-Aid man.
Kool-Aid man. Oh yeah.
But get this, right? Depending on what the translation is, and I actually don't like the new translation. In the old one, the classic one that we're playing, the one that was fan translated, he goes huzzah as he, you know, jumps to the ceiling. In the new ones with the Nicholas translation, he yells, oh yeah, as he jumps through. Oh,
man.
And it's like, dude, you're ripping off the Kool-Aid man. That's so bad.
Yeah, that's probably why they did it.
I don't like it. I don't like the new translation. I was reading the difference. You know, it's kind of funny. Kind of a side tangent before we go back to the egg corridor. Games are very similar to books, I think, at some point when it comes to translations. Like, we're going to come to a point where, you know, which version of this game do you want? Which translation? This is a shit translation. Get this version. Like, I was big into reading, like, Jules Verne, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I remember reading that, like, don't read the earlier translations because they're absolute shit. You know, get some of the later ones because they put a lot more love into it. And
yeah.
We're going to see that in games. You know, look at the differences between like Final Fantasy VI on the Super Nintendo versus on the GBA, you know, versus on the play. Like, we're going to reach a point where translations matter just as they do in books, which is pretty crazy to think about it. Anyway, side rant. Back to the egg corridor. So this is really like your first level in the game after you get outside the cave and outside the village. And what's interesting is it's very flat. There's not a whole lot going on. They introduce, you know, things for you to fight initially, but it's not overly complicated compared to some of the other levels. You're really just it's scrolling left and right. And this whole corridor is basically set up with eggs at the bottom that were designed to like hatch dragons. So Sue's whole thing and the Sakamoto family, they want to hitch a ride on a dragon off this island. They're stuck there. That's why I think you're sent to the egg corridor first. So I believe you don't find your brother in the egg corridor, and Sue sends you to the, depending on the translation, the grass town or the bushlands. What did you guys think of that?
That one was fun.
I liked that level. It was really fun.
Yeah, you had to backtrack a little bit to get some things to complete your quest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, dude, I didn't get the life capsules in the egg corridor.
Oh. Oh, and no.
So I fought Balrog with like 9 health and I kept getting pancaked. So I was like, oh shit, man. And then I watched some stuff and I read up and I was like, oh, frig. All right. So I went back and got him and it made it way easier.
This game was a lot of timing, like so much timing was thought into this. I mean, it did really hark back to like, even though this came out in 2004, like it harked back to like the early 80s, you know, Nintendo games, and I guess you can say even Super Nintendo, Sega, where it is a lot to do with timing and patterns. Like you had to pay attention to the pattern. Once you got the pattern down, then the game got much easier.
Yeah.
It's yeah. And you know, so he cited his inspiration for this. There's a bunch of different games, but he wanted to make a game that was very similar to the games he played growing up. And two of them were Castlevania and Metroid.
Right.
Metroidvania
right there.
Yeah. You know, I don't get the Metroidvania feel because it's not like an interconnected world, but for the rest, it's definitely inspired. I mean, you could definitely feel the DNA in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember the boss order, unfortunately, but I believe in Egg Corridor you fight. Is this where you fight Balrog where he's turned into a frog?
No, that's the grasslands.
That's the grass.
There was like, it was a guy like, it was a jacked up, it was a red flower Mamiga guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he was easy. He just walked back and forth and tried to punch you.
John, so you mentioned the bushlands had kind of an exchange. You know, you had to get several items to do something. What was going on there?
Yeah, you beat Balrog and you had to save the cat that he pancaked. And then the cat was like, ah, you seem like a nice person. I'll build you a bomb because that's all I know how to do.
Dude, that was a robot.
Yeah, it's a robot. It looked like a cat robot.
It does, with the pointers.
Yeah. Everything's an animal in this game, Matt. Get used to it. Besides the toaster.
My furry.
Yeah, this guy that made this game really liked animals. You know, he's a compassionate fella. So you had to get him some parts for the bomb, and then turns out it was to blow open the door for the guy that's been sending messages stuck in his little shed. So you beat the boss, you go over and you free him first, I think, or you go over all the way and you fight Balrog as a frog, which...
Yeah, so...
That got hard.
Strange.
Yeah.
That was... So Misery pops up, and for no... I don't think they give any reason, but they just like, here's Balrog, here's Misery, and she's like, all right, apparently you're incompetent as fuck, so you are now a frog boss. You're Balfrog.
I would like to see this as a cartoon, man, because it reminded me of like the Mega Man cartoon where they had the two stupid henchmen. You know, one was really dumb and one was sarcastic, and I could just picture that.
It kind of reminds me of like, you know, like on Looney Tunes, they always had like the Of Mice and Men reference. You always had like the big jacked up dude and the small dude was just smacking the shit out of him.
Hey, bye-bye, bye-bye. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, I remember that a lot. Yeah, that was funny. Balrog is just the whipping boy here.
Oh, completely, 100%.
Yeah.
Balrog is just such a great character. Like, he's so freaking charming, but he's just so stupid.
Yep.
Again, like you said, it was like, oh, I'm fighting the toaster. I'm fighting the bigger brother of the little toaster. The brave little toaster.
The bully.
Yeah.
Turns out, though, he's a compassionate fella, and he helps you in the next level or the level after that.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole reason why we're here, and I can't remember why we were fighting Balrog all the way at the end, but we get all the parts, we blow Kazuma out of the shed, and I think at that point, like, Dr. Booster comes along, and like him and Kazuma like hitch a ride on this jet ski looking scooter
bike
thing.
Yeah,
and they friggin' crash it, but they take the teleporter back to the house, and I think it's there that you learn. I believe Dr. Booster is the one that tells you, like, you're one of the robots that came, you know, that was, you know, attacking all the Amigas.
You came to the cave 10 years ago and you just wake up, right?
Yes.
You got sent up there so long ago and you hit your head and you wake up 10 years later. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I got no comment on that.
Random insertion story.
Oh shit. Because Booster tells you all that, right? Doesn't he give you the whole like 10-year story of your timeline? And then I believe after that, Booster sends you to the Sand Zone. And I believe that's because that's where the red flowers are being stored.
Yeah.
So yes, because you need to get the red flowers before the doctor gets them. Because if the doctor gets the red flowers, he's going to the Amigas, and they're all eating these flowers, and they're gonna just get jacked up and wreck things.
Yeah.
So, Nick, did you make it to the Sand Zone?
I'm trying to remember. I did. I'm pretty sure I did. Trying to remember everything through there. Sorry, I'm also just rereading up on some of the devices it played on, and seeing if there was actually a way to like change the controls, but it was not. It was pretty much you had to use.
I wish you guys would have told me that you were struggling with the whole keyboard thing, because I remember when I played this way back when, there's a program called Joy to Key, and it basically allows you to program it, take keyboard commands and transfer it to it. You know, so like if you're hitting right on your joystick, it'll register as that keyboard command, and then you can use basically any joystick to mimic any keyboard input. That would have been helpful yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was literally my only problem, was just because it was just like, oh, maybe if I just plug in my controller, it'd just be a little bit easier.
This level was a little harder, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is
this one. Oh, yeah, this one. Yeah.
This is when the difficulty ratcheted up for me. I don't know if you guys died a ton here.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much the whole time. This one took me a little bit to get used to.
Yeah, those skull heads were brutal.
you know, the game progresses, right? So like the egg corridor is very linear. Go one direction, then go back. And then you get to the you know, the grass town or bushlands, and there's a lot more differences in the terrain that you have to deal with. There's a lot of backtracking, so the level becomes more complicated. You get to Sand Zone, and like you're moving vertically and in spaces. There's the enemies are just like bullet sponges. You have to shoot them a ton. Like here, I think is where the difficulty. Like this is where you started to kind of get the flow of things, and it wasn't forgiving.
No,
this one you had to learn like what you're shooting, where you want to shoot to make like your own path to for jumping.
So you show up in the Sand Zone. You meet Curly for the first time. She's kind of a robot that doesn't remember anything either. And she's hanging out. Correct me on this. She's got a bunch of Amigas that she's been kind of raising. She doesn't remember what she's done. She's kind of like raising orphans.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's raising orphans. She's like, I'm with Amigas.
And she calls them the Colons, which is another punctuation reference. Like that's the name of the Amigas that she's hanging out with. Their little group's called the Colons.
Which break this into your fan fiction. She calls those the Colons, yet they're the fan fiction. She wakes up with a big cock to pound, quote, an ass.
You would bring it back to that friggin' fan fiction.
You gave it, you put it in the beginning. It is something I can bring back. I mean, she's really taking it to the colon.
I no, Nick.
Jesus.
Nick.
You're going to be editing this all out.
I'm not editing any of this out. You're going to... Oh, fuck. John, talk about the Mamiga fight with Curly before Nick gets into more butt stuff.
I want Nick to write some fan fiction about something. Because all I picture is like a third grader that just found out what tits are.
A body harvest Ooh, fan fiction?
Dirty ass brain, man. Good lord. Yeah, so you fight her. It wasn't that hard. She gives you the choice of switching your weapon. I said no because I was skeptical. Seems like this game has a long play involved, so I didn't want to do that. Plus, I use that gun the most, you know?
It's a good go-to.
Yeah. And then you progress further and you find an old lady, Jenka.
Yeah, Jenka.
Yeah, you find her house and she's like, my puppies are missing. You got to go find them. This was a bitch, man. Two of these guys were really hard to catch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you find all the puppies and then she gives you... Does she give you anything?
No. So you go there and you're basically like, hey, I want the key to the storeroom where all these red flowers
are. Yeah, that's what it was.
And she's like, no, I'm not giving that to you. So like the whole time the game's making you think like, okay, if we get this woman her puppies, she's going to come and like she'll eventually like us because we're giving her puppies and these dogs are annoying as hell. And
yeah.
You bring the last one back and freaking Balrog comes in and just beats the shit out of her and takes the key and like – So, all that puppy gathering you did was just a waste. So, yeah, that is when you end up in the storeroom, and that's kind of like your first introduction. They've kind of hinted at the flower thing as you've gone. You might see, like, there's like one room where you have to fight a crazed Amiga on the flowers. But here's where you see the flowers. And King, one of the characters that you're introduced in the Amiga village, who's kind of like the leader of them, like...
Yeah.
He storms in because they've got, I believe, Toriko.
Toriko. And dude, this was brutal, man. This was a sad scene.
It got dark. Go with it.
Wicked. So they get her juiced up on these, and he wants to avenge her, but the doctor just, like, bitch slaps him and kills him. And then you got to fight her, knowing that, I mean, you're going to have to kill her because there's no turning back from these things. And I think, like, they get so... juiced up, they die anyway, right?
Some die and some don't, and it's weird. Yeah? But she you kill her. So
that was a tough fight, man. She was chucking those rocks pretty fast.
That was I died a lot because my brain just would not register the pattern on that one.
Yeah, and it like with that floaty jump too. You know, jumping quick is not easy, and like she knew where you were gonna be. Yeah, what else happened on this level? Oh, King gives you his sword.
Yes, because right? King died. King dies, and he gives you the blade.
Yeah, that was pretty decent.
I used that a ton in the next world, the next level that we go to.
Short range, but it was pretty powerful.
So, you get done fighting Toriko. Toriko kicks the bucket. And you kind of walk out and you're all sad. And Misery and Balrog show up. And I think Misery sends you and Balrog into the labyrinth. I think you both get like sent there for some reason. I have no idea why Balrog gets sent, but.
So, this is where it kind of started. The textures started to remind me of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes. All right.
Huh. Just the foreground is just very reminiscent of actually the labyrinth, Sonic the Hedgehog, just because that pattern just kept on showing up and going through.
I got a vibe of that when we were in the grassland, the grass town, the owl looking blocks that were stacked up everywhere. I can keep going on that.
Yeah.
So the sand zone had some vertical elements to it. The labyrinth, you start off and it's dark. The labyrinth is just like this shithole. Like all the garbage of the island gets thrown in there. And you're at the bottom of this pit. And there's like a bunch of robots down at the bottom. And like, we've been trying forever to get out of here. Like some of them are busted. And they can't get out. It's just so bleak. So
it's darker and darker, man.
The level becomes even more complicated than some of the previous ones as you're trying to like jump up all these platforms to get to the top.
Yeah.
What do you guys remember about the labyrinth?
Jesus, it was confusing.
A lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
And get backtracking. What was the
damn cats?
Here?
Those like sleeping cats. They're annoying. It's one that actually recurs through, and like seems like every stage it kind of upgrades or has a different ability.
Oh, yep.
They're like little plushies or whatever I think they'd be. They're just annoying. They're just so annoying.
I found that if you swap to the blade when you go into the labyrinth, you could just wreck shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so eventually you make your way out of the pit. And I think this is – so there's a bunch of like bug people in this area. I think they're called the Gowdy. And if you're outside of any of the shops or anything like that, they'll try to fight you. But if you're in the shop, you can talk to them. And they basically talk about how they want to eat Mamiga and all that other crap. And you can – so you're given an option when you go into the store. And I didn't do this. I don't know if you guys did either. But one of the guys says, you know, hey, you've got a polar star and a fireball. Can I look at them? Did you guys say yes to that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That weapon was pretty cool. I figured a 2-for-1 meant that thing was crazy powerful.
What did it give you? So I didn't do that.
It was the snake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it was like it had the same shape as the pole star, like the little pistol looking thing. But as you level it up, it looked like a snake. It would slither through the air, and it could go through walls.
Really?
Yeah. So you could hurt some things behind the walls, which was nice.
It's fun.
Yeah. It couldn't destroy blocks, though. Like, it just went through them instead, so that was kind of annoying.
See, I didn't get that, so I never got to see that.
Yeah.
I believe you keep going in this level, and Curly's sick, and you have to get medicine for her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember why that's relevant to the story a whole lot, because you have to do something similar later on. But the big boss in the labyrinth, the big, I can't remember what was the monster's name, but it was like the X-Machine or something like that. What did you guys think of that fight? The big like tunnel robot?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. I mean, again, it was very just rhythm. So you just had to learn it, and it just took a while, just because it's one of those things where the thing that
you had a damage would close up its face.
Yep.
So you just had to keep on jumping back and forth and just pretty much timing it. And while also fending off, you know, any other side enemies that came in and bothered you.
Yeah, that was a tough one, man.
What I didn't get, right, is you get to the end of the labyrinth after you get done fighting this machine, right? And you find out that, like, all these people have been trying to get out, and the reason why they can't is because this giant boulder is, like, blocking the way out. I believe, right? Correct me on that. No, wait. This is the part with Booster. Man, I played this game three times. I beat it twice, normal ending, and my week has been just such a shit show. I've forgotten a bunch of stuff, and I can't read my handwriting. It's absolutely useless. But there's a cavern where you walk into the entrance, and you see Dr. Booster, like, falling to the ground. Did you guys jump to the bottom of the pit with him?
I can't remember. So yeah, maybe.
I think you do. The thing opens up and you gotta hit it while it's open.
So Dr. Booster falls. I don't know why he's falling down this pit. If you jump down after him, he dies, and I believe you get the booster 0.08, which is not very good. It's a jetpack, but it's not the best jetpack. For some reason, if you just ignore the fact that this old dude's fallen down a pit and just jump over the pit and keep going and just say, fuck it, he lives. So this game has this, like, weird risk-reward system in it where, like, if you don't do the thing you think you should do, you'll be rewarded with more, like, with more content and better items as the game goes on. You don't want to trade the Polar Star for the machine gun. And then you don't want to trade the Polar Star and the Fireball and get the snake. What you want to do is hold on that Polar Star the whole game, because you get a nasty, nasty weapon called the Spur if you hold on to it. But anyway, if you don't go in the pit after Booster and you keep going, he just magically later on gives you, like, this crazy awesome jetpack known as the Booster 2.0, which you need to get the best ending in the game. So the game...
Yeah, you fly...
It gives you no notice of this all. Like, the game basically, it's so counterintuitive to what you think you'd need to do.
Right.
So you end up at the boulder, and then for some reason, Balrog just jumps in on you. And you fight him again. And he basically says, like, I'll help you move this boulder. Just don't tell anyone that I did it.
Well, first he, like, You and Curly are talking, and he's like, aren't you guys listening to me? And you kind of fight him for a brief moment.
I love it. So from here, you guys end up, I can't remember the name of the area, but it's in the core of the island. Mm-hmm. And there's this, like, weird series of gates, and one of the gates is busted, and you have to go through. And the boss here is called just the core. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It's the monster that keeps the island floating, and for some reason Nick takes it there, but yes, it does seem to shoot sperm at you. Nick,
what it does.
Make the comments that you want. The floor is yours.
That's the only thing I really remember the whole core room is this, like, there's this flight. It's literally white little look that the sperm look like that's just shooting back and forth at you. I'm like, what's going on? And then you look at it. It looks like was a core. How do you describe the villain? Like, I'm putting up visuals so I can see so I can describe it properly.
Studying the core and its spermy attacks.
It's weird. It's like the reverse side. I don't know.
It's like a gooey looking cloud monster with eyes, kind of.
Yeah. Right?
I don't know. So, did you guys get the shining, shimmering thing in the bottom? Or did you ignore that and fight the core?
We just fought it.
Yeah. So you guys, So what happens here is this core raises and lowers the water, and you and Curly are fighting this core. And if you don't get the tow rope, which is at the bottom right hand, it's the shiny things to tell you to look for something. I believe you go, and after you beat the boss, you drown. And I believe what happens is Curly saves you your life and gives you her air tank, and she's dead. If you get that item, you hook her onto you, and you can save Curly. So you guys had a dead Curly. That takes you into the waterway. John, I think you and I talked about the waterway a little bit. What are your thoughts on that?
I got to here, and that's where I kind of ended.
So even if I beat Barros, I was going to end up with a bad ending.
Yeah, you guys, and the game gives you no notice that you're going to get the shit ending. But so you're in the waterway, and it's kind of like a lighthearted, the music's a little more lighthearted in this section. It's kind of like you just got over something really shitty and dark, but you're basically sent down through this channel, and the water steers you in different directions, and there's a really tough platforming area near the end where if you time your jump just right, you jump over where the water is going to suck you past, and it gives you a room where you can go in and you can read a book on how to drain the water out of Curly. You can actually save Curly here. So yeah, you and Curly basically can progress from here, and I believe on your way out you fight this boss called Ironhead, which is like this giant fish boss. I don't know if you guys saw that, if you guys did any watches of this afterwards.
Oh, I did. Yeah, it looks like it looks like a stumpy tuna with a metal like head.
That was so much more passive than I thought you were going to go in this.
Right. It's just like, I'm trying to hold back just a tad.
You said stumpy. I'm like, oh, fuck. Here we go.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, you end up get out of the waterway. You go back to the egg corridor, and you find like all these dragons have either hatched and they're attacking you, or they're dead. But you find out that one is successful. And you're given a chance at this point. You can get the worst ending where you and Kazuma basically flee the island that's going to shit on a dragon. Or you can progress and keep going through the rest of the game. And it takes you up the outer wall of the island where you're basically like climbing up to the top. And it's cool. You kill all the bosses on this, and all the little trinkets that you collect, all like the health and the little triangles, all flow sideways back into the side of the hill that you're on. So you get to the top, and the last section here is the plantation, which is where basically all the Mamigas are being like enslaved by the doctor, and they're forced to grow these red flowers. And you find the last Sakamoto, the mother. I can't remember her name, Amorin or something like that. And she is working on a jetpack to get up to where the doctor is, because there's like these giant crusher things. If you try to get up to the top, you know, you're not getting through. And there's a whole exchange where you end up in jail for a little bit. But you end up at the top of this thing eventually after you talk to her, and you end up on the balcony, and you fight Misery. You fight, I don't believe you fight Balrog. You fight Misery. You fight the doctor. You fight Sue. I believe Sue gets transformed, and you also fight the undead core, which is Nick's spermy boss friend, ramp right up.
Lovely.
And then the island, after you beat this, and you guys didn't get this far, but it's kind of a boss rush. Like basically you have to fight three or four bosses in a row and not die. And here you're basically given two options. You can get the normal ending, which I did, which is you flee off the island. You don't completely save Curly, and I don't believe you save the rest of the Mamigas, because the island, I think, does come crashing into the earth. But the Sakamoto family lives, and everyone's joyous and happy. There's a secret ending. Did you guys see anything about this?
I knew about it.
The three endings, right?
I watched a video.
I believe there's three.
The best ending is like the island just, I believe, stops and kind of floats.
Yes.
And Balrog is your actual savior.
Yeah, he's got wings. He's a toaster with wings.
Yeah.
So, yes, to get the best ending, there's like a little shed as you're fleeing the island. And if you jump into it, into this pit, you get into this nasty section. I think it's called the Sacred Grounds in the section that I played. But in the other translation, it's called the Bloodstained Sanctuary. And it is a bitch. There are no save points. And your goal is to get all the way to fight Balas. Yep. And basically, if you go and you destroy this demon crown that he's created because Misery made him do it, it's just going to keep regenerating itself. So you're just going to have more people coming up to this island trying to take this thing. So in order to stop this crown, you've got to go kill Jenka's brother, Balas. And I did not get to him. I watched him, other better players fight him. Balas is a bitch. Like, this section is nasty hard. So I was kind of hoping John would take a try at this so he could swear his head off at me for picking hard games.
Yeah, I didn't even make it that far, man. That's how hard this game was.
And that's it. That's it. I did not get to beat this.
I'm gonna try to play it through again. It deserves it. I mean, it was really fun. I had a lot of fun with this.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool game.
I just think it's fascinating this one dude made it. I mean, we've spent an hour and a half talking about like all the craziness of this game, the weird furries that Nick experienced, there's just a lot too. It's very quirky. I don't know if you guys got that vibe from it.
Oh, totally.
Very quirky. You can tell the one guy made it in the sense of there was no filters like other games. Like you can tell where stuff drastically changed. I mean, like look at any, like the, what Mario looks from that, from when it first started to now. Or Yoshi from concept to where it looks from where we see Yoshi is now. You could tell it took a little bit to get there. This guy's like, I have this idea. This is what it's going to be. That's it.
Yeah, this, you know, you don't get this. And I don't even know what the terminology that I want to use is. But it's like you lose the polish. But in not having the polish that a commercial game has, you also are left with charm that you might not get in a commercial game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the uniqueness, the stuff that makes it interesting that you want to keep playing. Sometimes that gets lost as like the committee decides that this isn't going to be appealing to the, you know, 80% of the players.
Yeah. So when you go against Balos, he has 1, 2, 3, 4 forms.
Not happening. You have an extra life pot that you get from Jenka. But even that is not enough to really get you. I don't know, man. I would have to. You can download a cheat engine to play along with this game. It adds like save points along the way and makes it a little easier. I would have to do that because there's no way I could beat this game standard. No way.
Yeah, some save states would have been key on a lot of this.
Yeah, it's not an emulator ROM situation. So save states aren't happening.
Yeah, there's four forms. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. No, thanks.
So, well, that's what I got, guys. Closing thoughts, unless you got anything else. John, tell us your thoughts on this and if you'd recommend it.
It was good. The more games we play, the more my patience expands and the better I get. Keep throwing harder games at me. I'll eventually immerse myself in them and actually beat the hard ones. I've finished half of the games we've played so far, I think.
Our record's not great.
No.
Nope. No, it's not. But, dude, I like this one. It's very underrated. I don't know. Maybe it's not underrated. I had never heard of it. But you know, I like those games that kind of fly under the radar and are a little quirky and unique. So I tried to hit one out of the park with Body Harvest because it showed up on all those underrated lists, but Body Harvest was not that great. This one was definitely, I give you props, Matt. I know you'd find one because you dig harder than I do. Cool weapons, hard sections, a lot of bosses, never got boring, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Your seal of approval, John?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. For sure. Seal of approval on that.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
You can't beat Free. Here's to it. Well, here, I can go in more depth. For it being a free game, like computer-wise, and even if you were to pay for the version, like the paid version, it's dirt cheap considering how much fun is actually built into the game. Like, I think it's like $20 for the Switch game. If you buy it for the Switch,
yeah, it's
for the Case Story Plus. That's dirt cheap for a Nintendo to play it. And I mean, I got it right off the website they gave us, and like it was fun. Like it was a lot of fun, and it was a quick, easy install. And like I said, I go back. I could if I'm bored or if I'm just need something to detach from for a moment of my daily life. It's a fun game just to go in and just go attempt and try to beat the level.
Yeah, yeah. Gold star from you?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a really good game. Like I said, I'm gonna try to go through, see if I can get the best ending again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll keep plugging away. I love that this guy just released it. And this was pre social media, right? So he just threw it on the internet and was like, here you go.
Yeah, what dumbfounds me is just like, not only did he just dump it on the internet, I mean, it's a 5-year passion project and no one wanted to pick it up. You know, he couldn't get anyone to get this out there.
Which I'm surprised.
But you know what? You know what? That doesn't surprise me though in some aspects, because this was, you figure, 2004. So we weren't in the complete wave of like everyone, like, you know, the late 90s, everyone getting caught up in the, it has to be 3D or it doesn't exist. But like 2D games for the most part were dead. So
I think I remember you even talking about that.
Everyone was so obsessed with 3D, they didn't, like, the 2D games were a rarity, and they got rarer as time went on, because just, that's old. We don't want old. New is always better. So,
which is now a stark difference, because now it's like, oh, how do we replicate this 2D and make it better? I mean, look at the, what's a good example? Well, and it's not 2D in a sense of there, but actually, yeah, the Street Fighter 4 game.
Street Fighter? There was Street Fighter, I think. I can't remember all the, I only follow the main line, but there was Street Fighter 3, Third Strike, and then there was a significant amount of time before you got Street Fighter 4. I mean, there was a ton of time.
Like, they just reverted back. They just increased, like, the cell shading, made it look more like a book, comic-y. And it's one of the best Street Fighters out there, I hear.
Yeah, I mean, but look, like we mentioned Braid, we mentioned I didn't mention Super Meat Boy.
Yep, that's a really
yeah.
Mega.
What's that Nintendo one? Dead Cells, right?
That's newer. That but same yeah. vein, that would not have existed without this. I mean, there's stuff like now, like yeah. Hollow Knight, Shovel Knight, like all these indie, you know, 2D Metroidvania type games, they all have that same DNA that you trace back to Cave Story. Something that, you know, Metroid and Castlevania and had, you know, elements of Contra and whatnot. Like all the classic games, this game just kind of like, I don't know, saved that DNA in a way and passed it along. I don't know. It's I guess to kind of close my thoughts on it, like, yeah, I highly recommend this game. You know, I played it before. It was fun, but I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into what I was doing or why it mattered. And playing it this time, because when we're talking about it on a show, you almost have to have, you know, a more critical look of things on what you're doing and why it exists. I mean, this is a fantastic game. It just, yeah, there's some weird difficulty spikes here and there, and there's some quirkiness, but that's part of the charm. You know, you scratch those high points out, and then what are you left with? You know, it's not as special. Nick said it right. You can't beat free. So, you know, if you want a convenient way to play it on a more modern device, like a Switch or not, yeah, absolutely go ahead and pay for a version. But
it's worth that $20.
Yeah. But if not, it's free. And there's no device that you have that can't run it for the most part. I mean, go to cavestory.org and the list is like near endless of the amount of things this has been ported to. And it's been special enough that these people just say, well, I want to put this on this so someone can experience it on this.
And I see there's just a good chunk of mods for it too.
Yeah. And they keep tinkering with it. It's amazing. Like, I'm not even joking. You know, the Genesis port that I was telling you guys about, they were just recently, like at the start of the pandemic, were putting more fixes into that. Like, this game was released in 2004, and there's still, you know, fans out there are still making improvements on this game and putting it onto new devices. It's just fantastic. So, highly on my recommend list, guys. Check it out. That's it for me. Nick or John, either one of you want to plug our socials?
Let's John do it for once. He probably doesn't know what our socials are. John, do you even know what our socials are?
No, I don't. I haven't checked them in months.
Just fucking.
If it goes to show you, I have 4,000 unread emails. So. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because I get notifications that we're getting more followers, especially on our Twitter, because Matt's doing some work on Twitter.
Last I saw Matt, your Twitter.
I like to theme. Dig into the cesspool. Don't you worry.
But follow us on Twitter, or you can even follow us on Instagram at spin-retro, all one word. On both at spin-retro. Yep. I really need to start hopping on to this. I need to start.
Get to work.
I know. I've been horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
You can also, so we have a website. It's nothing special. It's really just Podbean. Someday I'm going to build us a legit website because we're going to need one, but it is spin-retro.
Man, you're learning so many skills during this process.
I'm going to be valuable to somebody, probably not us, but I'll be valuable to somebody someday. So skills, someone had some skills in picking the next game, and that person is John. Tell us.
Yeah. So we were doing the 30-day music challenge, and Matt and I went on a rant about ActRaiser and how the song from this standalone game, or console-specific game, I think is what it fell under.
Yes.
For a category. And it hits hard. It's a good song. So I never played it. Super Nintendo game, ActRaiser. I'm sure a lot of people out there have, but none of us have. And it'll be exciting. Pretty stoked.
Nice, nice. That does it for me. Thank you guys for listening. Please leave us a kind review on iTunes or any of the other services that you use. Bad reviews, send them John's way on our socials. We'll pass it along to him. He's good for a good insult here and there. So
I'll file that away in the filing cabinet.
With your 999 emails you haven't checked. Right, I gotta go pee. I've had to pee for like the past 30 minutes. I'll be back.